The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We are back, and we appreciate all of you being with us. It's been a busy one. We went up to Chicago earlier and got the latest on the CFP, went to Washington on the NIL. Now Bruce Feldman joins us. And in a minute, I want to talk to Bruce about the upcoming season. There is a season. I know with all this news, we tend to forget we're not very far away from the college season. But Bruce is joining us from The Athletic. Of course, he also is with Fox Sports. Bruce, thank you for the time. And I don't think we've had a chance to talk to you about the biggest story of the summer so far, and that's the conversation in relation to the CFP. Good afternoon, and what do you think?
Good afternoon, Paul. It's been fascinating to see. I know you had Ross Dellinger on earlier, and I thought his story on SI.com was really interesting in that they were able to see, at least the working group, and maybe they kept it as a tight circle of those four people to examine the CFP expansion. I mean, I think a lot of us thought that 8 was going to be the step they would take, and instead, to get it to 12, and, as he reported, for to be able to keep it under wraps for that long. I mean, Paul, I remember about a year ago at this time when everything was kind of raging with the pandemic, and one thing that jumped out to me was that it was basically every conference for itself, and you had a lot of the leadership of college athletics really, instead of banding together, seemingly to draw lines and go, it's every conference for itself. And so, and I think in this case, now look, from the discussions and the things we've heard and from talking to, other people as well around the sport, that it seems like the model that they have kind of are pushing now, it has a lot of benefits for a lot of people involved. And certainly it's a bottom line business where you're talking about a dramatic increase potentially in money, and that makes everything go. But I also think what it feels like it would do is pump, some needed life back into a sport that, as great as it is, as much as we love it, tends to get stale. And I think what it really would do is in the second half of the season, when a lot of games that, typically should have some interest become very regionalized and even just stick to their own schools. And I think if they can do that, I think it will be really a big step forward, when they get to that point, whether it's, 4 or 5 years from now or not. At least it's something on the horizon.
And Bruce, how critical is it? Because we both know the Pac-12 is hurting and they need something to happen soon. So how critical is it for this thing to happen in 2 years as opposed to at the end of this contract?
Yeah, that would be interesting if they didn't go further to market and it stayed within the ESPN ABC family. In that, look, would that be money they'd be leaving on the table, or would it be money that they would be making a jump for? I think there's a lot of factors that I think the power brokers need to sort out, especially as it relates to what does it do for the sport in terms of the next couple of years. Just one of the things that, to me, seemed like a little bit of a head scratcher in this plan was a lot of it made a lot of sense, except, at one point it's like, okay, but they're still kind of bending over backward, it feels like, for the bowls at the expense of having some of these on campuses. And to me, that was like, okay, you guys have made a huge step forward, but at the same time, there's still some of that, kind of like, there's a little bit of a foul smell when it ties to, we have to do it. We want to stay in line with our bowl partners. And again, some of these deals are they're tied up in them for a little while. It's not to say, where the flexibility is for them to get out. But, at first when I heard this, I was like, is there any chance? Because it's money on the table. And what we learned last year was they can be pretty flexible, more flexible than they would have maybe thought or maybe been comfortable doing. Could they have done it even sooner? But just in terms of the bowl rotation, it really locked them in for a couple of years, essentially. And I think right now, it just feels like now, as they kind of have all these other factors that are swirling around college athletics, I mean, these are big steps they're taking and biting off a lot of things. And what jumped out to me a lot about this is it also shows that we have a lot of new leadership around the sport. Jim Delaney doesn't run the Big Ten anymore. Obviously, there's a new commissioner in Jim Phillips in the ACC. Larry Scott is gone from the Pac-12. Those are that's not just different way of thinking. I think they're like not as beholden to some of the things those other guys were beholden to a decade ago.
Yeah, and you know, Greg Sankey and Bob Bowlesby look like the veterans, and quite frankly, they haven't been around forever. I mean, they're moderately newcomers, so. It goes back to where we were a year ago when there really was no collaboration. Now it seems like there is until there isn't. So how does this all coalesce? How do they all coalesce and make this real versus, you know, kicking the can down the road, as the phrase we heard repeatedly in June of 2020?
I think the biggest thing, Paul, is there's going to be something in this for everyone who is at the table. You know, if you're Greg Sankey, where you've won a bunch of championships from the CFP, maybe you have a chance to get two in before. Now you could possibly get four. That, you know, adds a lot of layers to it. It also, if you're the Pac-12, there's been times where you have not gotten in when you've had a champion and you felt like you were snubbed. The Big 12 has had that too. I think that it gives the opportunity, a little more opportunity, the group of five. If Cincinnati could have been in position to get a spot last year. So I think what that also does, though, I think is to me is equally significant. Look, you know, I worked for ESPN for a long time. You work for them now. Is there is this element of this, like, let's say it's an Oregon-USC game where both teams have two losses. Realistically, neither team probably has a strong chance to make the CFP if it's at four teams. That game is marginalized to a large degree if it's in late October, early November. I think if there is a chance for a 12-team playoff and winning a conference championship and being in the top 12 means there's a playoff bid potentially looming, I think that just makes the discussion around each Saturday's games or each weekend's games that much more robust, and I think that really helps the sport. I mean, you know, as much as it's been all, you know, amazing to see what Nick Saban has done with Alabama, there is a part where it's just Alabama and Clemson, and maybe one year it's Ohio State, maybe one year it's Oklahoma, and there's, you know, every so often you get an LSU flash up or something like that. But I just think for the lifeblood of the sport, I think that would strengthen things a lot more to have those discussions a little more open-ended.
Bruce Feldman with us. Bruce, you did a piece for The Athletic about real football games and real football players as opposed to the boardrooms, and I want to talk about it because you looked at players that are on the verge of a breakout season. You identified 35 breakout players. Some of the names are, well, not many of the names are that familiar, although you do have Jake Bentley in there, who we all know from his days at South Carolina. Let's talk about what you learned, and especially a couple of players of interest to not only the national audience, but of SEC fans, including, we'll start with, predictably, a player at Alabama.
Yeah, Jahlil Billingsley, at some point right before the national title game, I did a story where I talked to all these SEC coaches about kind of a breakdown of what the Crimson Tide had. And obviously everybody knew about Devontae Smith and knew about the best offensive line in college football and Mac Jones and whatnot. Jahlil Billingsley's name came up a decent amount as he was this kind of X-factor guy. You know, he's not Kyle Pitts, but he is 6'4", 235, and runs like a wide receiver and has big catch radius. And is a guy that just worried people because he was kind of a matchup issue for defenses. And he was somebody who was kind of a little under the radar because, like I said, you know, you have the Heisman winner, you have a first round running back and a bunch of other things. And so I think as people look forward, obviously John Metchie is a terrific player and a terrific talent. He's back, and there's a group of young, really young receivers. You know, they have a bunch of different variable pieces. I think one of the things that, you know, you hear a lot from people as they go forward at coaches is like, okay, there's going to be a next one, and there's going to be all sorts of you know, it's just the way Alabama's been. Obviously Bryce Young has people really excited, But when I talk to other people about what are you looking at Alabama, and I talked to a ton of coaches for this story, it was really okay. It was fascinating to see how is Bill O'Brien, by the way, a former college tight end, how is he going to use this particular chess piece? Because we have a largely new cast in there, not just on the offensive staff, but certainly, you know, the skill guys. And he was one that is very, very intriguing. He's a name people know, you know, if you're a diehard Alabama fan, and certainly if you're a diehard SEC fan. But around the country, I'm not sure. You know, he probably got a little lost in the shuffle last year.
One or two other players I want to ask you about, because a lot is expected of Missouri, and we talked to you not that long ago about your piece on the Missouri staff, especially the assistant coaches. I want to piggyback on that, because there's a lot of excitement for this Missouri team. Quarterback comes back from last year for Coach Drink, and you mentioned now a running back that people are pretty fired up about.
Yeah, and Drinkwitz is really good offensive mind. I think people know that, certainly from his time as an assistant. And so now there's really two guys that I've heard really good things about on the offensive side of the ball. One's Mookie Cooper, you know, who is a really, really explosive skill guy. And then Tyler Batty, who's like a 5'9", 200-pound back, the fastest player on the team. And remember, last year, Larry Roundtree, I think, you know, as good as Najee Harris was, I think sometimes that kind of overshadowed some of the other really good skill guys in the conference. And Roundtree was a big-time player. And so now you have a guy who's a 4.3 speed guy. You have some other weapons around him. The passing game is pretty good. I think don't sleep on this offense that they have. Like I said, he got one of the best play callers in college football. And you have some speed he has to work with. And they have a really a promising young quarterback who had some really good moments last year. I feel like Mizzou kind of gets a little bit overlooked because everybody knows how loaded Georgia is recruiting-wise, and certainly they know about the teams in the West. But I think sometimes, you know, it's like, okay, we know Florida has players, even if they're new guys, and we know Dan Mullen's a really good play caller. But I think people probably, especially outside of SEC country, kind of aren't sure what to make of Mizzou. And last year, I think there was a lot of positive signs for a first year of a new system, especially during, you know, unfolded during a pandemic. Now they have a full off season. They have a lot of speed on this team. And I think there's a couple of guys that probably we're going to hear a lot more about when the season really kicks off.
And the season is, it's not around the corner, but it's not too far. Bruce, thanks for dropping in. I know a lot to unpack with all the issues hanging. We will look forward to talking to you again very, very soon.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
Great stuff from Bruce Feldman of The Athletic. Check out his piece. A couple of other players we didn't have time for, but definitely worth the read. We are up against a break. More of your phone calls right here at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything.
Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we are all back, well, hopefully, and we'll continue more of your phone calls. Cole Kublik, final hour. We've had a busy, busy guest list, and let's check out Tony up next in Florida. Hello, Tony.
Good afternoon, Paul. Glad to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
Well, I'm an old Georgia dog, and like your bumper music says, counting down.
I like it.
But I had a question to ask you. You know this 12-man playoff thing. I'm for it 100%. But what bothers me is, what are the other conferences besides the SEC going to say when easily 25% to 33%, sometimes maybe even half, of the people in the 12-team playoff are SEC players? Where's the money going to go?
Yeah, I suspect they'll grumble the same way they are now, but I mean, nobody cares. I mean, it's like the College World Series. Three of the eight are from the SEC. Frankly, it could have been more. Probably should have been more. Everyone gave up something. The SEC, I think, is primarily responsible for it going to 12, because I think the SEC felt like at eight, if they had automatic qualifiers, it really cut their chances out. But you're right. I would say it would be a disappointment most years if there weren't at least three, maybe more, in the playoff.
Well, thank you and appreciate your time.
Thank you. Nice of your call. Great to hear from you. I-Man is up next. He's in the playoff every year regardless.
How are you doing today, Paul Farnbaum? Don't answer that. I know you're doing well. You know, how come I know you're doing well? Because you're doing what you do. And you're making people happy all over the country, especially Mitch. You know, he loves you so much.
He does.
Mitch is just crazy about you. You're such a good man. Take everybody's call. You let them speak their piece.
I do.
And everybody wants to meet you, Paul. They want to meet you. They want to have the Paulpalooza. Paul, you know, sometimes I hear things and I see things on the TV, and I let them sink in, and I think about them a little bit. Try to comprehend them. Unlike some of your callers, just picking up and ranting and raving and pointing fingers. All right, the other day there was a soccer guy that apparently collapsed on the field. And, you know, the medics rushed out and they took him to the hospital and such as that. And I'm sure you're aware of the story. But on the news, when they went to it, you know, on the next morning, we're not going to show these videos because they're too disturbing.
Oh, yeah.
They're too disturbing. We don't want to show y'all that. We don't want to upset you with your coffee and your Eggos and your children in the house. But the same media that doesn't want to show the first responders out there doing their job and actually saving somebody's life and doing a tremendous job at that because it's too disturbing will show us 10-second clips all over the country with all kind of disastrous things happening. Why is that a double?
Well, I've heard that in like a college football game. There'll be an injury, and then the announcer will say, well, we're not going to show it to you again.
Right.
You know, I find that to be total BS, and I'm sure I'm upsetting my bosses. I probably shouldn't, but that's how I feel. If it happened, it happened. It's news. You're not showing it to upset people. You're showing it because it's real. And we're talking about it. And if we're talking about it, we may as well be able to see it. I'm not saying you have to show it 4,000 times, but,
right.
You know, for a lot of broadcasters just love to preen and you know what I'm talking about. You get the guys that we're not going to show that again because it's just not right. Well, shut up. Quit talking about it then.
You know, Paul, I knew that once I opened this conversation up, and I did, I had to think about it for a little bit. I knew that you was going to be the guy to come to with this. And I especially knew, I think I already knew, that was going to be your response. Because your response did not shock me one bit. I mean, it's like these people, they've already got the attention. They've got the job. They're on the camera. And then they have to create all this extra little bit of drama.
Well, you know why. They're prima donnas, I mean.
You know, I tell you, some of the things you watch for, they tilt their head to the right or the left, and then they kind of lean it forward, and they wrinkle their eyebrows a little bit.
I could give you a list right now of the five most likely broadcasters who would pontificate about why we're not going to show it to you. You want me to give you the names?
Absolutely.
Oh, I just realized I work with someone. Never mind. Can I get back to you on that? I'm in.
Yes, you can. We can have this conversation privately.
Let's have this conversation one day at Auburn, like when we're right before the show. I'll tell you. You already know who the names are. You don't need me to tell you.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, there's 2 million people that probably got up and cut in the grass right now. They're not listening. But you know, when I see this stuff, it's almost like a double standard. And we're only talking about from yesterday to today. This is too disturbing, but that's not. And these people are watching videos of aliens snatching the spines out of children. But that's not disturbing.
Well, you know, it's one thing, if something happened to a young person, that might. But, you know, we're talking about athletes here. And this soccer right. player for Denmark, thank goodness he's okay. But
exactly.
He did have a cardiac arrest in the middle of an international soccer match.
And you know what? To me, you want to show that kind of stuff because those are the kind of services that all of our cities need and should be guaranteed when everybody's talking about defund and wreaking havoc.
You're right.
And I don't understand if you had a hurricane in your area and these people were going and looting these homes, you have a right to shoot because you
you and I both have lived through a lot of tornadoes in Alabama.
That's right.
So tell me why when the next time there's a tornado, heaven forbid, you know, why the CNN reporter is standing right in front of the house that got blown away.
Oh, and then the best part is when they climb up into the rubble,
right.
and then they shove the microphone in the homeowner's face. How do you feel? How the hell do you think I feel?
Have you ever heard that? There's a country song. I can't remember the guy's name, but that's how it began. That's how the story begins. And I'll have to dig it up. But it was just north of Birmingham in the song. And the guy, he said the song began with the guy just lost his family. And the story begins with a local news reporter sticking the microphone in front of my face saying, "How do you feel?" Anyway, we'll be right. I'll tell you.
Have a good day.
Somebody probably knows the name. It's a pretty well-known guy. We are back after this. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Well, we have been busy teaching at the University of Alabama, but I and several of the faculty members, including some dear friends who are now at Cincinnati of all places, are asking one question about name, image, and likeness. Okay.
Sure.
If a student athlete is being sponsored and making, you know, plenty of cash to take care of his needs and then some, how can they be expected to attend class, to even take classes? You know, or just drop out and go into some developmental pipeline like The Rock Johnson could, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson could easily turn in the XFL into. I mean, we're baffled by how this.
Well, at some point when all this comes together, there, whether you can make money on the outside or not, you still have to meet the standards of your position. So. You are required to go to class. You're required, as you know, to keep a certain average. So I don't know. I don't think it's going to change because of the ability for a young man or woman to make money.
Right. I mean, I see your point, and we all agree that they're going to have to do that up to a point. But right now, they can leave after 3 years. So why could they not just leave after one and be developed?
Well, you know what? In basketball, you can already do that. I mean, you have this. This was it, the G League, whatever it's called. So, you know, football. It's hard to do in football because there's nowhere to go. The NFL will not take you.
Right, which is where I mean, this is wild. But you know, one of my buddies is conjecturing this, but. what stops the XFL from becoming that G League?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to remember what who the XFL is connect is what the relationships are. If there's any NFL relationship, I don't know the answer to that. Because I pay little attention to spring leagues because they're usually gone before I've even had a chance to watch a game.
Sure. Well, I pay so little attention to them myself. But to me,
hey, by the way, like Manny, we talked to you a lot last spring. How are you feeling about the fall? Is everything going to be normal?
Yeah, actually, it's going to be probably more than normal. We're getting an influx of students that we did not expect in our enrollment. We're trying to pile teachers in the classrooms as quickly as we can. Everybody, now I think we not only got excited about the championship, but there seems to be a real energy by incoming and returning students to get back on campus and put this year behind us. I know the faculty members are ready to put it behind us too, but they're really, for lack of a better word, they're really jazzed up right now.
Yeah, you know, I think that is going to be, I think you're going to hear that everywhere. I really do. I've interviewed a number of my colleagues who have said they're looking forward to the season more than any other season. I mean, I think that's just a return to normal. I met a friend for lunch today, and you know, I mean, there aren't that many times you've been able to. I mean, I've done it a few times, but this usually it's for business reasons. But this was just okay. You know, friends that we used to get together with, and you know, all of a sudden, it's the norm again. Even though I haven't seen this friend of mine since March of 2020.
Yes, there seems to be a sense of relief, exuberance. How about those words to describe it?
Yeah, I think that's very accurate. Completely. Hey, thank you very much for the call, Manny. Stay in touch.
Yeah.
And let's keep in touch with you. Mike is up next in Tampa. Hello, Mike. Good afternoon.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
We're doing great.
Yeah, I was listening to your comments about Nick Saban and the caller that was trying to kind of denigrate his performance, and I have to agree with you. I think that on the whole, and taking in his whole body of work, that Nick Saban is the greatest coach of all time. But before we deify him, it's important to realize he hasn't always been the best game day coach. I mentioned to you a couple weeks back how Spurrier took an underdog team at South Carolina and beat him. Even back when he was won his first national championship at LSU, he lost a game decisively at home to Ron Zook's Gators. And, of course, he lost to Urban Meyer in one of the SEC championship games. So he's not without, I guess, challenge at different times with people with comparable talent.
No, Mike, I could give you six or seven examples in Nick Saban's career, but that would probably be it, though. I thought his preparation of his team for the Clemson game in San Jose was subpar. But, you know, we're talking about a guy that, yeah, I can tell you every one of Nick Saban's losses at Alabama without looking it up. I mean, that's how rare it is that he loses.
Yeah, I know. I will tell you what I think is one of the best calls he ever made was the, I guess it was a championship game, BCS, with the playoffs, I'm not sure, but he did an onside kick unexpectedly against Clemson.
Yeah, that was a 20. That was the 2015 CFP game out in Arizona.
And I thought that was a brilliant call, and I don't think many other coaches would have attempted it.
So, no, I thought it was. I thought it was. And by the way, he has said several times they would have lost the game. I mean, the team was in a complete crash and burn mode. And he knew he had to do something. I frankly thought that was the defining call of his career. I agree with you completely.
Well, I just wanted to put my two cents in because I think he's great, but I don't think he's ready to be deified yet. So,
well, no, I agree. Thanks, Mike. And I was talking to Joe Goodman yesterday about that, and I think we are now entering a season where the expectation is that not only will Nick Saban win every game, but it won't be close. And I say this as someone who covered Paul Bryant for two or three years and Nick Saban for his entire body of work. And, you know, I've never seen this before. There was a moment early in Tiger Woods' career when it didn't look like he would ever lose. And quite frankly, there were times when he didn't lose. But this is different. This is college coaching. We are going to head to the break. We appreciate all of you being here. We have a lot more to do. Cole Kublik in the final hour. We'll get his look ahead to the upcoming season. We appreciate your calls, and we will get right back to them right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we are back and glad you are with us. Steve is up next. Steve, good afternoon. Welcome to our show.
Hey, Paul.
Hey there. Good afternoon.
Hey, I wanted to talk about the 12-team model that they're going to and what it's going to do to the group of five colleges, bringing them some money. I think they'll start catching up with some of these bigger schools after a little while. You know, they'll be able to bring that money in and put to the athletic departments, building them up better. You think that'll help them out a lot? Maybe parity?
I think it'll be significant. The one thing they won't have is the television money that the Power Five conferences will get from their Saturday packages, but the playoff money will be significant. It won't close the gap, but it will certainly pay a lot of bills.
Do you think that once they get going that way, though, maybe the television money will start coming in? Eventually?
Well, it's hard for me to imagine Coastal Carolina or even, Cincinnati or USF ever cutting the gap. Because remember, I always hate to use the SEC as an example, but you almost have to, but... You know, the SEC, it has its ESPN package. It's got the CBS package, which is coming over to ESPN in the short term. It's also got a college. It's got a conference network, which this program is on, which is pumping tens of millions of dollars into every school. And there's no way that even Cincinnati, which is a high brand of football, in an important league, there's no match for that. Frank, it's impossible.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I just figured that, you know, once they start getting that playoff money, you know, it could help them with recruits.
It will. I think it will help significantly, but it won't close the gap. JJ, thank you for the call. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, it's a great privilege to talk to you.
Thank you.
I moved to Alabama about 5 years ago. I found your show about 4 years ago. And I remember the first time I heard Miss Auburn call in, and I thought, great, here we got a woman talking about college football. But, I mean, when she started talking, that lady sold me on that first phone call. She knew her stuff, man. And then you sold me as a fan when you took time off to go to her funeral.
Well, thank you. Tammy... is one of the most special people we've ever dealt with here, and it's still painful for many, many people to think about what happened, because there are certain indelible voices, but I can't think of one in the history of the show that continues to resonate every day.
Yeah, she was certainly one of them. I actually lived in Sylacauga when that accident happened, and I passed her accident on my way to work.
Oh.
And I had no idea that it was her until I heard it, until I heard you talking about it on the radio, and I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, that was one of the worst days we've ever had here.
Yeah, I know it. I know it was a bad week in general. Just the outpour. Anyway, I was calling about something Iron Man said. Not to skip past that, but he said something about how people wanted to meet you, and he called it Paulapalooza. I think you should do something like that. I mean, if I knew you were going to be, like, say, at walk-ons and off 280, I would certainly go there to get your autograph and to shake your hand, because you make my afternoons. I mean, like I said, I've been listening to you every day for 4 years now.
Well, JJ, thank you for saying that. And, you know, one of the things that I think, you know, everyone has gone through various degrees of separation for the past 15 months. But the thing that I probably enjoyed more than anything on this program was when we got out in the football season, meeting people. And our Friday show is very low key. It's unlike the Saturday show where there's often, you know, a lot of, you know, thousands of people. I mean, we have, you know, people just drop by, and it's great. We can literally, you know, talk during the breaks and meet. And I really miss that. And I'm hopeful that we'll be back at that in a couple of months. But I appreciate you saying that, because I think sometimes you do kind of take things for granted that and I will make a stronger effort to try to meet you when we get to Alabama. Hey, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check in with Matt, who is out in Texas.
How you doing, Jim, my friend, Mr. Paul Feinbaum?
What's happening, Matt?
Oh, not much. I want to talk about the Texas A&M football. And
really?
I just want to say the Alabama fans and Arkansas fans first. I'll say this Arkansas fans first. You ain't never going to beat us, Pig Suey. We own you.
But, you know, by the way, Matt, lately that is an accurate statement.
But I want to talk about Texas A&M with Alabama. Paul, I get Alabama's coach is the greatest coach ever since Bear Bryant, who went to college as head coach. But every coach has cracks in the armor, Paul, and they eventually start showing. That's why I say A&M's
going
to be Alabama.
And Matt, let me. What do you think is the crack for Nick Saban?
The crack in the armor for Nick Saban this year would probably be his. He doesn't return much of his offensive firepower this year.
Well, he certainly lost a lot last year. I don't think anyone could disagree. But Matt, you've also heard these Alabama fans call in, Legend and others, say, no big deal. We got players right behind those guys that are just as good.
I know they said that, and I don't care what they got to say, Paul. I'm a diehard Aggie, I'm a proud Aggie.
Well, you ought to be a proud
Aggie. They can talk about smack day one.
Well, Matt, you got a couple of seconds remaining. You know, give them a piece of your mind.
I got to say, the Legend, I don't know if Aggie fans, we're going to roll tight on you in College Station this year. You can get an L, not a W. Dig him, Paul.
Okay. Thanks, Matt. Matt is in case you did not catch his drift, he's a proud Aggie. We are heading to the break. We still have an hour to go. We hope you'll stick around. Cole Kubelik in the final hour, we'll ask him about the Aggies and some other schools right after this.